Our high school guidance counselor used to ask us what you would do if you had $1 million, didn't have to work. And then invariably, whatever you'd say, that was supposed to be your career. So if you wanted to fix old cars, then you're supposed to be an auto mechanic.
So what did you say?
I never had an answer. I guess that's why I'm working at Initech.
No, you're working at Initech because that question is bullshit to begin with. If everyone listened to her, there'd be no janitors because no one would clean up if they had $1 million.
If I had $1 million. If I had $1 million.
I'm talking about millions of dollars.
What would you do if you had $1 million?
I'll tell you what I'd do, man. Two chicks at the same time, man.
We're living in a material world and I am a material girl. Or boy.
Well, what about you now? What would you do?
Besides two chicks at the same time?
Oh, yeah.
Nothing.
Nothing, huh?
I would relax. I would sit on my ass all day. I would do nothing.
Well, you don't need $1 million to do nothing, man. Take a look at my cousin. He's broke, don't do
If I had $1 million, if I had $1 million.
Well, I'm up Bigstack Jacks. Now, Tamales just spent over on the board. SP Futures up 350. They were down 12 last night. And SP Futures down 39. They were down last night. Dow was down over 100 last night, but now it's only down, it's up a buck, so we're doing this back and forth, back and forth, back and forth. We have Brendan back and forth from Michigan, Chicago.
Yep,
first he's running the marathon. He had to run the marathon in Chicago, then he had to run the marathon in Boston the next day. How did that happen, Brendan, the next day, the two big marathons in a row?
Yeah, there's a lot of controversy about that among runners because, you know, Boston is typically the third Monday in April on Patriots Day. And with all the postponements this year, they decided to keep it on a Monday in the fall when things are going to be closed in New England, so they settled on Columbus Day. The only problem with that was that Chicago is also on Columbus Day weekend. It was already scheduled for the day before. But they chose to keep it on a Monday and have it right at the day after Chicago. There were a handful of runners who did both races, who finished in Chicago on Sunday, hopped on a plane, and flew out to Boston. It was more intriguing than just hopping on a plane because you have to pick up your bib and your packet in person. So the couple of folks that I've heard of flew to Boston on Friday, picked up their bib and chip number, flew back to Chicago so that they could pick up their packets for Chicago on Saturday, ran Chicago on Sunday, went to the airport, hopped on a plane, flew to Boston and ran on Boston yesterday. The interesting thing was, I hope that none of them went on Southwest, because I thought they would have been
saved. All right, so as a marathon coach, I have to believe that your coaching would not have somebody finishing a marathon, sitting on a plane for several hours, and the next day trying to do it again.
Nope. In fact, it's very difficult to do it on back-to-back days in any event, just because of the wear and tear on the body and on the psyche of trying to do that. But, you know, it has been done. I mean, there's one group of people who do seven marathons and seven continents on 7 days. That's a new latest thing, that they run on all seven continents in a week, one day after the other. So they finish a marathon, they get on a chartered plane, and they go to the next continent, run the next day, and do that a total of seven times.
Are there marathons scheduled 7 days in a row? Are there marathons scheduled 7 days in a row or 7 weeks in a row?
No, 7 days. This is a particular series that some guy concocted to raise some money for himself. It's an organization that promotes seven marathons in seven consecutive days on the seven continents.
Well, how just in logistics, how many people are doing this?
There's usually about 20 or 25 to try it every year.
So how do you have a marathon set up for you in Europe just with seven people? Who the hell does all that for you?
Well, they work it out so that it's the same course as some of the other major races, and they don't shut down traffic for it, obviously, like they would for a big city marathon, but they work it out so that they can run a certified marathon course on each of the seven continents. It's also not done through the streets of London, for example, for Europe, or the streets of Paris. It's a more remote location, but they do have certified courses that are out there for the race.
So it might be like the marathon in Glenview or someplace, that type of thing.
Yeah. Yeah.
Interesting.
There are also a couple of folks who have tried to do a marathon in each one of the 50 states in 50 consecutive days.
I don't even understand how that's physically possible.
I don't either.
Well, it seems physically impossible until you recognize, or put it in this perspective, when you're looking at the elite athletes, the people who, like the Kenyans and the Ethiopians and even the Americans who are training for this, many of them are training 150 miles a week in their training routine for 9-10 months a year. So they're effectively running a marathon a day. They're averaging about 20, 21 miles a day just in their normal training. And so for most pedestrian people like you and I, it seems a very daunting task. But when you put it in the perspective of how many miles they're typically running a week, it's not that far of a stretch to do it. And they, of course, run slower than they would when they're doing the racing to try to win the races for really fast time.
How much do you eat if you run a marathon every day? It's got to be more than the guy who is the Olympic swimmer.
You eat quite a lot because you need to replenish. Well, you need to load up on carbs for the next day, and you also need to eat a lot of protein to rebuild the muscle that you've damaged in the course of the marathon.
I don't see how the hell you. I mean, even elite hockey players can't play 20 days in a row. And that's not a marathon. I mean, of course, you're getting hit in hockey, but still, I don't see how you do it. I mean, I guess people do, obviously, but at the end of that,
yep,
at the end of that month, what do they look like at the end of the month? What if you did a?
They're pretty well spent. I mean, there's also a guy who hiked the Appalachian Trail. He did it in record-breaking time, and he was a very thin-looking person to begin with. And over the course, I forget what it took him, like 3 months to do it from start to finish. And he lost something like 40 or 50 pounds, and he was pretty thin to begin with. But he lost a considerable amount of weight hiking the Appalachian Trail in record time.
Well, way back...
It's not a good thing to do for your body. I'm not saying it's a good thing, and I'm not defending it, but it is possible that people have done this.
Well, way back in the day, when Dr. Jay and I were living on the south side in our big house down there, his dad came to town for one of these surgeon conventions. So we, of course, piled into the Conrad Hilton because they had some massive buffet for free. Imagine that. Remember those days, don't you, Matty? So we go, plus his dad was here. I love talking to his dad, and obviously John wanted to see him. So we went over, and they had some doctor there who gave this huge slide presentation of he was the doctor on a Himalayan Mount Everest climb where they were trying to do one side without oxygen that had never been done without oxygen before. And they had these people in there, and they showed them when they were starting. And these were the elite climbers, like, of the world. They had, like, a couple women, but mm-hmm. maybe 8 guys, 10 guys. But then but the side they were going up on, you couldn't just start. You had to go somewhere else because, you know, it's not, Mount Everest is not just a peak. It's this massive thing sticking out of a jungle, basically, right? And, so if you go from the one side, it takes you like days of basically slogging through the jungle on some path before you even get to the side you want to start at. Cause that's why that side had like never been done before, whatever. So anyway, you've got your low Sherpas and your high Sherpas. I mean, that's not what you, but I know they're Sherpas. I'm not sure if they're low or high, but whatever. But you got the first group that'll take you through the jungle and up maybe, I don't know how many thousand feet. Then you got the high Sherpas that help you out the rest of the way. And, when you get to a certain amount, you're breathing so hard that you can't eat. You can barely take a sip of water. And every one of these people, I mean, they didn't show them naked or anything like that, but they showed them, like, in, you know, tight shirts, and everybody was ripped. And you're sitting there going, these guys are just in tip-top shape. Well, they ended up making it. A few guys did, only by the grace of God. It was happened to be sunny. They had one day left they could make the ascent, and it just happened to be sunny. I mean, the guys that do this, they get to the top, and all of a sudden you've got like one physical day left. And if it happens to be cloudy or snowy or something, you're just out. You just turn around and come back down. But there's, you know, you basically make camps every couple thousand feet up. You don't just like walk from the bottom to the top. It's just too damn big. And one lady, I think, got killed at some kind of accident, deprivation, and she missed a knot that she'd tied like 9 zillion times before or something. But they made it down to the bottom, and the doctor went up, what's it, 24,000 feet? I think the doctor made it up 15 or 18,000, and if you had to see the doctor, you had to come down to see him type of thing. And, but they were, I think they averaged losing an average of like 30 pounds. You should have seen these guys. They looked like they had been in a prisoner of war camp or something. I mean, you wouldn't think people that were not, you know, big muscle like a football player at all, but guys who were just, you know, ripped, 190 pounds, 180 pounds, or like 160. They looked like they were caved in. They looked like they were caved in, Brendan. And the doctor said that it's at least a year of recovery before you try something like that again. Because,
the process of your body, people always talk about the carbo loading dinner of marathon runners the night before a big race. It's also true for ultramarathons or climbing Mount Kilimanjaro but Mount Everest. Because the body first processes glycogen that's stored in the muscles, then it moves to fat, but after fat, it moves to muscle. So your body's feeding on itself. It ultimately starts to process muscle for energy, because there's not enough glycogen or not enough fat to use efficiently to move the body, to propel the body upward and forward. So it's actually cannibalizing itself at a certain point.
Yeah, I mean, it can't be good for you. I mean, when you're in that kind of shape, you probably can... I mean, I don't know if anybody wants to do that 20 times in their life. You probably could do it a couple, but,
You don't want to do it very many times. That's why it's dangerous. And when many people see that, they make it their goal. Just like, trying to be the fastest person up Mount Everest, for example, but the physical toll and the mental toll that it takes on the body and the mind is phenomenal. And not very many people are able to handle that physically or emotionally.
Well, hey, what do you... On a legal side, I've been listening to this Jan Gruden thing.
I was going to ask you, instead of talking about the marathon today, I figured for sure you were going to tell me you were giving up the radio so that you could go coach the Raiders.
$10 million a year? I'd have to have Maddie negotiate. You negotiate me 11. I need 11. If he's getting 10, I want 11.
and you're worth every penny of it.
What the hell? I can tell people to tackle harder. Who's the Steve Kerr say? One of the lady announcers that grabs the coaches coming out of halftime says, "So, Coach Kerr, what'd you tell your team?" I told them the same thing. Every coach has told their team since high school, basically pass the ball around and don't dribble out of bounds. Don't no turnovers. And by the way, shoot faster. You got the same thing. It never changes. He just walked away. She's looking at him like he was from Mars, but it's all true. I guess
shoot faster and don't miss your shots.
I was never a massive Gruden fan, although I do like the faces the guy makes. And I surely was never.
Referred to.
Plus, I've never been a Goodell fan, but I'm just kind of curious, Brendan. Technology and maybe people's stupidity of putting stuff on paper or an email goes further. I'm just wondering exactly how did everything become fair game? How does an email found in a totally different investigation between him and, like, was it a buddy on the Redskins, Maddie, or something?
It was Bruce Allen, the guy who was the president of the Redskins, apparently was on the other end of his email exchanges.
Well, I guess I don't understand how that becomes public knowledge, why somebody thinks it is, from the government or whoever else. There's got to be someplace somewhere, even though... out of all the people I've met, I think I have less ill will towards most, even though I am half Irish, which means you got a little something going. But I was never a fan of Goodell's, and I'm sure that I said some nasty stuff about him somewhere and in some conversation regarding him saying how sorry he was when Johnny Unitas died, when the guy couldn't wait for Johnny Unitas to die because Johnny Unitas was the guy who kept making up all the noise about the people they didn't want to cover in insurance, the 100 people from the 50s that were still alive or something. So, I think Goodell is totally two-faced. It's all for the money. And I think, all of a sudden, so I send an email, 5 years ago to some guy saying, boy, this Goodell guy, of course, what he said about him wasn't nice, but okay, I don't like him. How is that something that is prosecutable to me because somebody stumbles across that email from the government from 5 years ago?
It's not prosecutable. Nobody's bringing criminal charges against John Gruden. this is done because it was disclosed. And you can have all the private conversation that you want. You can tell me things, although I'd recommend that you don't do it on the air. But you can say things to Maddie and me that, that you are wanting to blast Goodell or Gruden or Joe Schmo. And it could show you in a very unflattering light. And that's typically not prosecutable. But in this case, he's resigning under public pressure. And the NFL is acting, in a way, as a private entity, asking him. Well, they did, apparently they did not ask him to step down, but he got enough pressure that he submitted his resignation because he knows that this is going to be a big distraction for the
okay,
rest
but,
of the year.
Right, so now
it gets released in a couple of different ways. If there's an investigation, they could, you know, and sometimes it's a criminal investigation for things like sexual harassment in a certain organization. You know, the Washington football team was being investigated because of what happened with a lot of their cheerleaders saying that they were forced into sexual situations. And they also had a lot of controversy because of their former name. So these things come out in general reporting, and this is the response of the private entities, not the government prosecuting them for things that he said.
All right, but this, well, you sort of answered my question in a way where you didn't answer it. Since we don't care, for God's sake, Brennan, the courts are closed. The only court we have mm-hmm. now is the court of public opinion, unfortunately.
Mm-hmm.
What I'm saying is, let's take it another way. You and Maddie are talking in the Tripoli. Somebody says something bad about some referee that, you know, happens to be female or whatever, and you guys aren't against female referees. I'm not. I think a lot of them do a really good job, probably better than half the guys. But the... So all of a sudden you say something, and I just happen to be taping something away on my phone next to me, and my phone overhears it. How does that become mm-hmm. my property to disparage you? I'm not investigating you. I mean, the Washington Redskins, whoever the government is doing this, they're not investigating Gruden. How does that become public? That's my question.
How does it become public? Because in your case, you're sitting at the bar, you're recording the conversation because Manny and I are sitting next to you in the bar, you have it on your phone, so you walk over to the Tribune or you walk over to the New York Times or to Fox News, depending on what your persuasion is, and you say, hey, I've got the chief on tape or I've got Brendan on tape. Listen to this. Don't you know that he's saying all this thing is exactly contrary? And now here's an example of what he really feels like. It's really an embarrassment thing, but it happens in two ways. One, somebody who's involved in the conversation, you know, like one of the two people that are involved in the conversation wants to backstab or release the information. Or the second is that a third party gets hold of it and is like a whistleblower. Like that woman from Facebook who was testifying before Congress about all the stuff that she had from Facebook.
All right, but I guess what I'm saying is I could just be an ass and do something like that because I just don't like anybody, which isn't true, of course. But if it becomes a government employee who I'm paying to investigate Washington football team emails, where do I get the right when I'm on somebody else's dime? Where do I get the right to publish something about you on an email that you sent to Paul Allen or whatever the hell the guy's name is?
You don't. And depending on how you got that information, you, for disclosing information, could be prosecuted in certain steps. In other cases, there are exceptions for what are known as whistleblowers, that somebody has information that is so important to the general welfare of the public. Let me give you a hypothetical example. If somebody knows about the lead pipe in the bad water in Flint, Michigan, and they knew that there were years of reports that people in the government who could make decisions to fix it hid the information and lied about the information, they probably would not be prosecuted for divulging that because of the calamity of what happened in Flint. But it could also be that, depending on what your role is, if it's something that's part of just the research to say if there is a problem, that you could be prosecuted for violating. Just like lawyers and people can be violent, can be charged if they violate a gag order, if there's a court case going on, and the judge says, you cannot talk about this to the press, and somebody from the legal team discloses it to the press, they can be prosecuted, or if it's the prosecutor's side, the case can be thrown out of court.
Yeah, except that's so it happens so disparately, and because somebody gets a hair up his behind, if it happens to one person who does it out of 100, I'd be stunned to the point where you wonder if it's fair to prosecute the person. I mean, I wonder right now, Brendan, and given the fact that I'm now that you've been on the show forever, and I think you, even though you're nowhere near as conspiratorial as me, I think you wonder big time for however many years you've been on here. Every time I rant and rave about it, sure looks to me like that piece of information, because you know, I think you trust me enough to know that at least I think I'm telling the truth. That when I'm staring at, you know, the screens all day long, and all of a sudden I see the market move 5 minutes before some announcement, I'm not so dumb. I'm from the South Side. I realize that somebody got that information before I did. Okay, I think, you know, you probably say, well, there's just like another trader guy. The only reason why he made a bad trade is because somebody got the information ahead of him. Well, now you've got three Fed officials basically telling you they're doing that. You know, and you've got every single congressman, you know, with the COVID thing and pretty much being charged with like activity. And I think at some point, I mean, if you can't, for some reason, you can't go after these people. I mean, if it was Brendan president, if I could still call you those days, if you were president, I'm just doing the show. If I'd call up and say, hey, Brendan, do me a favor, will you? You got 50 cases where you're prosecuting, you know, 50 schmoes for insider trading. Why don't you drop the cases? Since you can't go after any of these big people, what are you doing spanking the little people? I mean, at some point, we got to just, I mean, I don't know, where we're going to go here, but now somebody got great glee for pushing this out. I'm going to say the person who put this out, and I am no Gruden fan, but I don't think this is fair from 3-4 years ago. I just don't. I think there's a possibility that the person did it was for spite and worked for the government, is under our employ, and I don't like it. It doesn't mean I like Gruden at all, but or like his attitude about things. But I mean, do you think I'm totally wrong or not?
No. In fact, I think it's very interesting, but it's also a diversionary tactic that a lot of high-profile people do. For example, the conversation shifts between something that's really egregious and maybe illegal. I'm not saying what Gruden did was illegal, but it shows the type of a character he is, and maybe it's part of the culture of football that, you know, you're anti-gay, you're misogynistic, and you don't want this to be known outside of the good old boys club of the NFL. So you try to protect that, but then the focus shifts from, did he actually say it? Did he actually do that? You know, in the case of somebody who is accused of embezzling funds or something, once it's disclosed that so-and-so embezzled $1 million, the focus shifts by, how did you find out about that? And now we're gonna try to keep it out of evidence without even denying that it happened. So now the focus shifts by saying, you know, we're gonna be pure and just all according to the law that this should never have been disclosed, rather than saying, yeah, I embezzled the money. Yeah, I'm a jerk. And the fact that I said it is how I really feel. But I don't want to get to that discussion. I want to turn it over on somebody who disclosed it, who found out about it, and ratted me out so that I could no longer coach an NFL team.
Well, yeah, and I think somehow, Brendan, I don't know what the... There's a shift in how you say things. And I'm not trying to be all that politically correct, but there's a shift in the way you say things. I mean, my record has been about as good as anybody's in hiring people of all shapes, sizes, and colors. I mean, I really don't care what color. I mean, I'm colorblind, which what Lou tells me you can't say that anymore because now that's not the way you're supposed to be today. But I mean, I think I should be able to say that. I'm not going to say, don't hire a black person or a woman to run a something in the city. Okay? And, because there's an awful lot of people that are black and female that are awful talented and they should be in a lot of these jobs. I get that part. But if all of a sudden it's obvious to me and anybody who's got more than a fourth grade education that it's become to the point where if you're not black or female, you don't get a job in the city anymore. Or now you're cutting down the gene pool to a certain extent where there's a lot of people now that are probably pretty talented that you're excluding the same way probably blacks and females were for a long time. But I don't like anybody being excluded, whoever it is, even if you're old Irish guys. I want the best person for the job all the time. Well, here we have a city that's 3 years into this experiment, I'll use for lack of a better term, and guess what? It looks like a lot of people there don't know what the hell they're doing. And the place is falling apart. Now, why is it unfair for me to say that? It's obvious. I'd say it if they were white. I'd say it if they were from the moon. I don't care. The fact is, the place is falling apart. Now, is it falling apart because a lot of people were excluded from these hirings? Just maybe as they were 40 years ago, you had to be white and from the hood? I mean, it wasn't right then. It's not right now, Brendan. I mean, or where am I wrong here?
There's a lot in what you just said.
Well,
crossing a lot of lines, and it's a long way away from where we started this conversation with John Gruden and his thought process.
Well, I mean, the NFL is the same way. You can only hire coaches that have been hired before. It's like they got a little college. They all got their own little group too, right? I mean, what the owners?
Yeah.
You think you and I could be an owner? How is it that in this country we've allowed we can't own a football team until the other idiots vote us in? Give me a break. Why do I have to? I don't have to get voted in to open up a bar or a grocery store.
No, but you do have to be voted in if you try to buy a co-op. If you think about buying a co-op in New York or in places in Chicago, you do have to be voted in by the other members who own in that building. So there are examples besides the clandestine nature of the NFL. But again, that's a private venture. You can make your own rules so long as it's not discriminatory or exclusive of a certain race or ethnicity or sex just because they're a certain ethnicity or race or sex.
Well, there's a big difference between...
And then the fact that you don't have $5 billion, you're only there $4 billion or something, and that's not enough to make the cut.
There's a big difference between, you know, 50 guys or ladies or whoever putting up enough money to build a golf course and say you can only be blonde hair, blue-eyed, or only be black, or only be Asian, whatever it is, to be in this... I don't have any problem with that. Honestly, don't. I mean, if it's their money and they're not bothering anybody, knock yourself out. I wouldn't want to be a member there, but, you know, knock yourself out. That's a lot different. They have a country club ideal on something that's a national event, and you give them damn near an antitrust exemption on top of it. I mean, it's one thing to let somebody do that with a country club. It's quite another to say that could be the only country club in town.
Well, I agree with you. So, and I'm not sure what the real point is here, how we got onto this point, but I agree with you that if they are investing their own private monies, they can be as exclusive as they want.
And to their own detriment, probably. I mean, I got to believe that your value is economically, your value is less if you exclude the amount of people that can be a part of it.
Well, yeah, and if you're talking about a country club that is exclusive to a certain ethnicity or a certain race, they're not going to be able to have the Masters or the U.S. Open or other events like that at their club.
We also are not going to be able to have much of a dining room like Butler if guys can't bring their wives. Who's going to... What are the guys going to do? Sit around and look at each other?
Well, that's true. But you look at even some of the clubs that are here in Chicago, and for years and years, they were male-only clubs. And, you know, over years, they changed. They've allowed people of other religious backgrounds or ethnic backgrounds to grace the club. They've allowed women to even eat in the club. So times evolved for economic survival because a lot of these clubs realized that they could not continue to keep the doors open if they were so exclusive of who came in, even for events, for dinners or for talking events.
Well, is it politically incorrect to say the reason why a lot of clubs didn't admit women members is because the wives didn't want them there?
I don't know if it's politically correct or not, but the fact is that it wasn't just the girlfriends or the people were not affiliated with the club. It was, you know, across the board. That some of the clubs didn't allow certain ethnic backgrounds even religious to come in and participate.
Well, what's the super big club in New York? Right on what is it? I've been there a few times with the CBOE board. Duke Chapman's dad ran the place at one point. It's right off Central Park. What the hell's the name of that place? It was built by was it Andrew Carnegie? And the downtown athletic club was too snooty, so he built another place, and he built it like 10 times snootier than the one downtown by the time he got done.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I'm talking about. It's right off
Yeah.
Anyway, but New York geography lessons, another show. Thank you. Brandon, thank you very much. If these things grow any bigger, I might have to have you back before the end of the week, bud, if you're around. So how did your guys do, real quick? You guys all finish?
I had a couple of people who didn't finish because of the heat. One guy, one of my runners, spent some time in the hospital Saturday night because he tried to outrun the heat, and he didn't have a good day.
But
for the most part, people were a lot slower. People missed their time goals, but it was a day that almost everybody that I know have finished, which was a good thing.
How big of a gap?
Not like the guy yesterday. Did you hear the guy yesterday in the wheelchair in Boston? Took a long turn and cost himself $50,000. He missed the course record by just a few seconds, and he went off course at the very end of the race, and he estimated it cost him 20 seconds. And he missed the course record in the wheelchair by less than 20 seconds. And the prize for setting the course record, in addition to the monetary prize, was another $50,000 just for setting the course record.
When did the last person go off? I mean, I was listening to radio at 8 o'clock. They said the elite runners were half done, and it was cool as can be outside. It wasn't bad at all. When did the other people start?
Where, in Boston or
here,
Chicago?
Here.
Yeah, the elites went off at 7:30. And the last wave of people started at 8:30. So people from that wave on Sunday started the race as late as 9 o'clock because of how many people were in that last round.
Oh, okay,
so,
big difference.
You're right that the elite runners, all the elite runners, men and women, were pretty much done by the time the last person started the race in Chicago on Sunday.
Before it got caught at all, it was still overcast and it was fine for them. Might have been a little humid, but all right, Brennan, we got a dash, buddy. SP Futures now up 6. NASDAQ Futures up 46. We were down last night. We bounced back. We had a big sell-off on the close. We'll tell you about it in a second. Be right back. Stocks and Jacks.
How much confidence do you have that your investments will make you wealthy? Do you truly know the odds? Welcome to Luckbox, the control freak's guide to life, money, and probability. Luckbox shows you how to gauge the likelihood of success before you commit to an investment or any other decision. And Luckbox is free for 1 year at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Each new issue dives deep into the current investing climate, separates the signal from the noise with relevant trade ideas, and equips you with cutting-edge tactics you don't already know. Luckbox is the essential magazine for proactive investors who are hell-bent on pursuing life, luxury, and happiness through sports, fitness, travel, food, spirits, music, and a whole lot more. Smart investors don't bet on possibilities, they play the probabilities. Luckbox is $7.99 on newsstands, but you can subscribe for 10 free digital issues at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Don't rely on luck. Get Luckbox at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks.
Stocks, jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now, right here, right now, right now.
Well, no thanks, Stocks and Jacks. I'm Tom Allies, Mr. Matt Weber, the board. SP Futures up 7. Actually, up 475. They were up 7 a minute ago. They just dropped during the break. NASDAQ Futures up 41. They've been bouncing around here, mostly positive. Last night, they were down reasonably heavy. The NASDAQ was down about 70, and the Dow was down 100, and the S&P was down about 12. So we bounced back here overnight. Right now, Dow Futures up 29. Individual stocks in the Dow, nothing really moving. We got Nike up $1.92, and we got Salesforce up $1.15. Yesterday we had the retail stocks, a lot of them like Home Depot and Target, those guys were all up, lows, and then all of a sudden the day wore on, we really sold off into the close, whatever you want to say it. So yeah, that was kind of weird yesterday. Been weird for a while. DAX down 45, that's 0.3%. These guys are picking up some of the sell-off we had in the close last night. FTSE down 27.4%, CAC around down 34.5%, so roughly 0.4% across the board down over in Europe and Asia. Nikkei down 267, they were up yesterday, that's up 0.5%. Shanghai down 44, that's 1.25%. Hang Seng down 362, 1.4%, these guys are up yesterday. Major indexes, China, Korea fell at least 1% as oil prices continue to rise, which is not good for those guys. The way of review, Dow was down 250 yesterday, S&P down 30, and the NASDAQ was down 93. So about 0.7% across the board, and all happened really in the last hour or so, maybe in the last half hour. Bonds, pretty much unchanged at 1.60 on the 10-year. Bund unchanged at -0.12. And Japan is, well, it's unchanged too, positive 0.09. So not much going on in the credit markets this morning, even though yesterday was kind of a semi-holiday with the banks and the cash bonds closed on the day. Oil up again today, up 44 cents, 80.96. Brent up 28 cents, 83.93. The spread between the two is $3. Natural gas down a dime at 5.24. Gotten to be a long way from 6.10 or whatever it got up to. It's like almost a dollar down now. RBOB unchanged at 238. That gold up 890 to 1764. Silver unchanged. Copper unchanged. Silver unchanged at 2266. Copper unchanged at 435. And we have Bitcoin on $300 to 57,304. As Jamie Dimon must be listening to the show, he says Bitcoin is worthless. However, it's only down $300. Maddie, what do you got for us? Traffic, weather, sports.
40 minutes past the hour. Good morning to everyone out there. One crash in the area. That's on the inbound Eisenhower at North Avenue, blocking the left shoulder. Everything else is all quiet out there on a Tuesday morning. Weather today, mild temperatures all around the country today. In Chicago, partly cloudy skies with a high of 69. Right now, it's overcast, misting a little bit out there, and 63 degrees downtown. But get this, for our Phoenix listeners, sunny with a high of just 68 today. They'll warm back up into the 80s.
They will be hoodies.
Oh, yeah, winter coats on. Oh, yeah. They'll warm back up into the upper 80s later this week. But a cool front in Phoenix today has it sunny with a high of just 68. Right now it is clear and 58. In sports, White Sox were rained out yesterday, but they'll play this afternoon, weather permitting. It's a 1:07 Central Time first pitch. Sox trail the Astros 2-1. It'll be Carlos Rodon taking the hill for the White Sox to face off against the Astros ace, Lance McCullers Jr., who won Game 1 and who wasn't going to pitch yesterday, but now will pitch today. Boston advances to the ALCS, beating Tampa 3-1 after a walk-off sack fly win last night in the bottom of the ninth, 6-5. Monday Night Football, Ravens were down big in the second half. They rallied back to beat the Colts 31-25. Chief.
Do we have Joel? Joel, how are you, buddy?
Joel,
what's going on, man? Explain to me why last week, every day, we were up or down 65 points in the spoos and then closed somewhere between 45 and 50 in the same direction, but came back a little bit on the close. Now, yesterday we had a big sell-off into the close. What is going on at the end of the days here, and why is 60-point moves in the S&P now normal instead of like 20?
I heard you when you were doing your update, and I'm like, well, you stealed all my material. You know what? Markets go up, markets go down, and then markets go sideways. They usually don't go sideways with the same kind of velocity that we are now, but just digesting the move down. And coming up, kicks off tomorrow morning with J.P. Morgan. You know, so you got, you know, some profit in that stock yesterday. It's had a big run, unusual run. You got other stocks that are starting to report. People start playing the pre-earnings run. So it's just, the market's just bunching up here, Chief, and it's trying to decide, you know, whether that low that we put in from last week is just like every other low that we've had over the past year and a half. You buy the dip, and then you return to all-time highs. I mean, that is just what the market is trying to decide right now. And it's volatile, and it's whipping around good, Chief. So really all I can say is that market's digestion period.
Well, last week, with all the craziness that was going around, up, down, up, down, up, down, like you're saying, just to put a perspective for the listeners, the QQQ, the NASDAQ index, started the week at 360 and change and finished the week at 361 after all that.
Wow.
And yet there was a lot of, you know, what they used to say, wailing and gnashing of teeth in the meantime by a lot of people.
I mean, I thought for sure, what day was it we went down? I think it was Wednesday, right?
Yep.
And we were going down that area fourth time. You know, there's no such thing as a triple bottom. let alone a quadruple bottom, right? So we were going through. And then we ripped. We had a real rare occurrence last week. We had 1, 2, 3, 4 inside days in a row. And you don't see that very often. And then you busted out to the upside on Thursday. And, you know, they didn't love the jobs number on Friday, but, you know, they held in there. And now you're just coming back into the area of where you had, you know, the top of the inside range. So, you know, if you're selling the edges, if you're selling premium on the options, it's probably coming in right away. It's a tough market. And trying to decide whether Q4, we're just going to get a great round of earnings, blow things away, go back to new all-time highs, or are they going to come out with a Q4 earnings or Q3 earnings and say, hey, they're good, but we're going to issue some lower guidance?
Well, yeah, I don't know. I'm not even sure, though, that people, well, I'm as you know, my shtick is that I don't think these earnings, unless they start telling you what the nominal numbers are versus the other stuff, I'm not even sure that we can pay attention to what the hell they are. I mean, if somebody comes out and says their revenue is up 4% without letting anybody know where they are in this inflation gig and what they're raising prices are, I'm not so sure the information is even any good for me, really. I'm the only one who feels that way, I know, but I mean, I think it's a lot of this is just funny money right now, Joel. That somebody could easily have a 4% increase in revenue, but they've raised their prices 20. I don't know that it's that helping anybody. Some people can, some people can't. I mean, it's, you know.
I totally agree with you, Chief. I mean, and a pickle and a hard place, right?
Well, yeah, and I think if the rates keep creeping up, everybody keeps saying that there's not going to be any difference, and yeah, there is. I mean, there already is a little something with that. Not so much. So what about your guys? Big Ten looks up for grabs, eh?
I mean, Ohio State looks tough. Michigan State looks tough. I mean, you know, there's just a lot going on. And, you know, we got to buy this week, and then we got Northwestern. And then we got Michigan State, we got Penn State, we got a tough gambit to run, and we'll see. I mean, it was an exciting game. It was good to beat Nebraska on the road. We're undefeated, but the heart of our schedule is coming up.
Well, you got a laugh for Northwestern.
It'll be tough.
You got a laugh for Northwestern.
We got Northwestern. Then we got, then we got Michigan State on the road. Penn State on the road, Ohio, you know, Indiana at home. That could be a tough game, and then the big one against Ohio State. But the young coaches that Harbaugh brought in are certainly doing a good job, and you know, we're a much, much improved team from last year. It's good to see. He's coaching them up, and we'll just see how we can do in the big games. That's all there is to it.
I'm looking forward to the Penn State game. Should be good.
Yeah, I just wanted to quickly mention before I go, doing another educational event next Saturday, the 16th. I'll send Daddy some information over, and we'll get some people to attend.
All right, well, we'll definitely get that out for you, buddy. Take care. SP Futures now only up $1. NASDAQ Futures up 31. Be right back. Kenny Pulcary.
This self-directed trading is a lonely job. Online trading is not as easy as point and click.
No, it's not. Everyone, even professionals, need to share ideas and think out loud every now and then.
That's what I like about PTI Pro Direct. Their staff of former option floor traders really helps me choose the right strategy for trading option volatility and plan the time decay for my covered writing program.
Yep, nothing can replace years of trading experience to stop you from making that dumb trade and for saving a few bucks. We've all been there and done that.
Yeah, I have access to all that great trading advice and experience for just a penny a share for stocks, $1 for equity options, and $1 minimum a trade.
Our clients at PTI Pro Direct can call when they need a little help on a trade or just to talk about the market in general. We trade every day. We love this stuff.
That's what I like most about PTI Pro Direct. Cheap prices along with great advice from real floor traders. It's the best of both worlds.
Tell your friends. That's PTIProDirect.com, PTIProDirect.com.
Hi, I'm Audrey Johnson, an owner of Home Source Realty and a frequent contributor to Stocks and Jocks. If you're nervous about the stock market and considering diversification, or are looking for a rate of return way better than your banks, consider adding rental properties to your portfolio. Whether it's a condo, single family, or multi-unit building, I can help you select a property that meets your financial needs. Call or text me at 708-349-3456. That's 708-349-3456. Or visit my website at myhomesourcerealty.com. That's myhomesourcerealty.com.
Interested in promoting your business to a high-end audience comprised of entrepreneurs, traders, executives, and the everyday business person? Consider advertising on Stocks and Jocks. With a devout listenership covering the Chicago market, along with a vast online presence, advertising on Stocks and Jocks may be just what it takes to put your business over the top. For more information, contact me, Matt Weber, at matt@stocksandjocks.net. That's matt@stocksandjocks.net.
Stocks, Jocks.
Stocks and Jocks.
Stocks and Jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now, right here, right now, right now. Can't buy me love.
Hello and welcome back to Stocks and Jocks. I'm Tim Allen. Mr. Matt Weber on the board. SP Futures up 2. NASDAQ Futures up 34. Not so sure Kenny Polcari agrees with the can't buy me love part.
How you doing?
Doing pretty good. The immortal words of one of my friends in the OEX pit. Something about totally incorrect, of course. The guy says, well... He said, "I'm an old fat, gray-haired guy. I can't find sex anywhere." Oh, and broke. And he goes, "But if I had dough, they'd work with me."
There you go.
If I had what?
If I had dough, they'd work with me. Not sure that's true, but let's put it this way: in his mind, it was. What can you say?
Yeah.
So, Kenny, what? All this stuff is going on in the world. Maybe you can explain this to me. We have this oil shortage, right? Gasoline going up if you've bought any gas.
Well, wait, is there an oil shortage? I don't see that. There's not an oil shortage. There's a supply production issue, but there's plenty of oil around the world. So in that sense, I don't think there's a shortage, right?
Well, it depends on what article you read. I agree with you because it was, what, a year and how many months? Was last April of 2020 when oil was trading below zero and there was you couldn't get another teaspoon of oil into Cushing, Oklahoma.
Right.
And they were asking you to park tankers outside your place in Florida because they had nowhere else to put them. How does this happen in 20 months? And now I'm reading here today where the 135 coal plants in India, that seems like a lot, they're down from 18 days supply to 8. Over the last few months, how does that happen, Kenny? I mean, it's not like we're not. I don't get it.
I have no idea how that happened.
Well, here we decide we're closing our coal plants, and so what we're doing is we're exporting all our coal to somebody pollute some other place.
Yeah, well, not only closing the coal plants, but right, they cut back on production in this country. And they said, you know, the other day they were talking about. You know, when we became the swing producer, the Saudis produced so much oil, they forced oil lower, our break even was higher, blah, blah, blah. They put all these guys out of business. Guess what? Oil's now back at, it's piercing $81 a barrel now.
Yep.
We've gotten much more efficient in the way we produce oil. There's going to be a huge margin in there now. So why these companies are not ramping up, other than the administration putting pressure on them not to, right?
They're not willing to spend money, but they don't know what the world's going to look like a year from now. It's possible.
So maybe they're willing to just keep their money in the bank and pay dividends and not really spend it on CapEx.
Well, just produce it $10 and sell it for $80. It's not so bad. Of course. Well, I mean, but when you say that, I mean, I think you and I, we probably should explain to listeners that just because you have corn out your bedroom window on your farm doesn't mean it's at the $8 level in New Orleans. You got to get it to New Orleans, right?
Right.
And again, moving oil around, the logistics of oil is way harder than the logistics of corn. So, I mean, you have to have... Didn't the tar sand stuff at one point when oil got down to like $30 a barrel, wasn't the tar sands down to like $5 a barrel in the field because nobody wanted it, nobody wanted to transport it?
Yeah, no, yes, I believe it was. I don't honestly remember, but yes, I believe it was, or at least it was. It certainly was. It was low, for sure. I don't know, $5.
Yeah, I mean, it was... It took $15 a barrel to get it somewhere, and somewhere didn't want it. But okay, what do you make of the trade last week with this constant VIX being up? The constant, well, not so much this week, but a few weeks ago, the constant purchase of the November VIX calls, not in October, not December, but November. And last week we had, you know, 360-point move days in the SPOOs, and at the end of the week we ended up unchanged. I mean, it seems like we're getting, I don't use the term skittish or something. Like Joel just said, it's sideways, but it's not an easy sideways. It's
right.
What do you make of that? Is it predictive of something?
I think there's a couple things going on. I think that, you know, November is the target date where the Fed is now expected to say something and to launch something. So I think people are just focused on November. I think it takes us through the October turbulence. And I think that when he announces at the beginning of tapering, I think that there's going to be another pullback in the market, right? Because they're buying the VIX calls, which means they're expecting the fear to go up, the VIX to go up. And so I think it's playing all off what everyone expects Jay Powell to say at the November 2nd, 3rd FOMC meeting, right? And we're going to get even maybe a little bit more insight on that on when tomorrow, because we're going to get the FOMC minutes from last meeting is going to come out tomorrow. So there may be a little bit more clarity or a little bit more understanding of, you know, what's going on behind the Iron Curtain at the Fed that maybe, you know, people missed during the press conference, or maybe they didn't talk about it at the press conference. So I think this continues to be an interesting but turbulent time.
Would you sign a petition? If I were to put a petition together saying, I don't want to have to listen to these people anymore, I just want to see their trading accounts.
I would love to see everyone's trading accounts, absolutely. Because I think, first of all, it's baloney, and then we've had this conversation, that any of them are even allowed to have a trading account. Anyone, whether it's the Fed, they're an elected official, they're Congress, they're the Senate, they're in the administration, none of those people should have if they want to be in the market, which they can't be, they should all be in blind trust, right? They should not have control over it. They should not be able to have any decision-making process. And so we've already seen it. Well, we've seen it a number of times. Members of Congress, you've seen it now with two Fed officials. It's interesting, though, that sort of kind of died down, right? There's no, if that was me and you, we'd be all over the front pages for 3 weeks, and they'd be hauling us off to jail. Meanwhile, there's been no even talk about it anymore.
You know, it's funny. Why do you suppose the press is like? I mean, is the press getting so narrow that it's only owned by so few people now? Cameron, there's something I have to get your thoughts on that, because you're obviously more into it than I am. Why does stuff get out and why other stuff doesn't get out? I mean, it's getting really scary, especially
I think a lot of that is the press, right? What stories does the press choose to focus on versus the other? You can see, listen, and you can see it right down the lines, right? You see the left side of the press doesn't say anything about that, doesn't say anything about the border, doesn't say anything about, you know, rising oil prices, versus the right focuses all the attention on all those issues, right? The left wants to focus their attention on, you know, the human infrastructure project, why it's so important, blah, blah, blah. And I get it. I get, you know, we certainly do need to spend money on infrastructure, roads and bridges and tunnels and airports and train stations and ports. I mean, we absolutely do. I'm fully behind that. But, you know, they'll choose to continue to focus on, you know, the other parts of now what's called the, you know, the human infrastructure part of it, which is an interesting conversation. So, yeah, I think it's all very much dependent on what the press chooses to focus on or not.
I'm a real railroad buff, so the idea of infrastructure has always been big to me. But I just it's the weird thing, though, Kenny. It's like the Patriot Act. We want to focus on patriotism. There isn't a person that you and I knew in those days, if we went to restaurants, bars, coffee shops, on buses, if we were to ask any person what exactly they mean by patriotism in this act, not one person would be able to give you a 30-second dissertation on what was in the bill. This thing, everybody right. wants infrastructure. What are they even talking about? Are we, I mean, is there any person that would even be able to tell you, including me, okay, what exactly do we have now? We have a highway trust fund. Are we going to work through that, not work through that? What is the combination of interstate highways, U.S. highways, state highways, city highways? Which are in the worst shape? How are each one of them funded? Does anybody have a clue other than use the word infrastructure? Whatever that even means? What we're actually trying to accomplish here?
No, I'm not sure they really do. And if you saw the, you know, I think it was last week or something, in the middle of the debt crisis issue, they were hauling around the infrastructure bill, the $3.5 trillion bill, and it had some ridiculous amount of pages on it. And they even said, you know, half the people don't even understand what's in the bill, never mind have they even read it. They don't even understand it. Like Nancy Pelosi said, well, we have to pass it first to see what's in there. What does that mean? I mean, you know, that harkens back to, you know, the Obama health care, right? Well, we don't really know what's in it. We have to pass it first to find out what's in it. It's ridiculous. It's ridiculous.
Well, my elves tell me that in there is a clause that says every transaction you do with money now over $600 goes right to the IRS, or the IRS can access it. Well, how's that part of infrastructure? I want all that crap out of there, Kenny. I'll be flat out. I don't know if you agree with me. I want all that crap out of there.
Think about that for 1 minute. Every $600 transaction, every single transaction, is going to go to the IRS for what exactly? Your car payment is $600. I mean, your grocery bill could be $600 if you have a party one night at your house and you go out and you spend $600 on food. Are you kidding me? It's ridiculous.
Wait a minute.
It's ridiculous that we're even having this conversation.
What's ridiculous is you're spending $600 on food for a party and I'm not invited. Maddie,
all right, I'll send you the invite.
Maddie, did you get invited? I don't recall.
Not yet, but it sounds like a pretty good party.
Sounds like a pretty good party. Plus, I know he's a real good cook. I bet it's a real good party.
Listen, you know, and it doesn't take that much to spend. My daughter was in town visiting from New York with my niece, and so I went out yesterday to a food truck because we cooked dinner last night at home. I made this great halibut, this Thai chili, sweet chili halibut over rice.
Oh, wow.
I bought 3 bottles of wine and all that stuff. I went out and went food shopping just for that stuff. It was $250, and it was enough for 5 people.
Oh, yeah, easy. Right? Especially if you got...
So $600 would be very easy to spend.
Well, if you're doing some decent wine and some good fish, you're right. You're right in the bullseye of paying up.
Yeah, absolutely.
Why don't you just get your wine from the Bulgari winery over in Italy?
I can't ship it over. There's no car. There's no space in the...
That's where the yacht comes in, goes over and pick it up. Kenny, as usual, good time, buddy. Have a good week. SP Futures up 2, NASDAQ Futures up 36. Be right back, Mr. Jeff Joseph.
Hello, this is Tom Harrell, the Chief. Confused about investing these days? I suspect you are not alone. Investing was never easy, although at times it may have seemed so. I think one reason behind the current concern, although maybe not explained as such, is how the fluctuation in the American dollar and the associated politics is affecting your investments and your wealth. It may not be enough to make some money in your investments. You may need now to make enough to exceed the amount that your leadership is depreciating the value of the dollars you've worked your whole life to accumulate. That same leadership has seen fit to maneuver risk-free interest rates to near zero. Providing positive risk-averse returns in a zero-interest and declining real wealth environment is by far the toughest assignment I've ever had in my years as a money manager. I'm sure that a lot of you have heard that one way to possibly deal with this problem is to invest in so-called hard currencies like silver and gold, the idea being that they will retain their relative value in the face of devaluation of paper currencies like the dollar. To be honest, I have never been a gold bug. I've always had faith that having enough dollars and a good investment strategy was good enough. Now I'm not so sure. But I do know that if I did invest in gold or silver, I'd want to do it in the same manner as we do with PTI for investments in the market, with defined risk. If you feel the need to invest in gold or silver, we can do it using the same strategies that we use for our protected index program. No matter what you invest in, we feel that you need to know and control your risk. Find us at PTISecurities.com, that's PTISecurities.com.
Is your business being challenged by the complexities surrounding healthcare reform or other matters related to human resources management? If so, then Cognos HR can help. A longtime friend and contributor to the Stocks and Jocks radio program, Cognos HR provides its clients with a perfect blend of strategic consulting and day-to-day HR management to drive overall improvement in business performance. Companies that join the Cognos HR family are better able to manage healthcare costs, enhance benefit offerings, and improve employee satisfaction by leveraging our access to Fortune 500 benefits. Our innovative onboarding and payroll technology, along with our constant attention to detail, enables us to provide the highest level of quality service to our clients. Now, your time and energy can be focused on generating business and increasing your bottom line. We'll take care of the rest. For more information, call us at 630-401-8810 or search us on the web at CognosHR.com. Cognos HR, innovation in human resources. Licensed in Illinois and Arizona.
Hear ye, hear ye! The Homer Broadcasting System is on the air!
Stocks, jocks,
stocks and jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
You are out of control!
Right here, right now, right here.
Something happening here.
Hello, North Bay Station Jacks. I'm Tom Al. Mr. Matt Weber on the board. SP Futures up 2, NASDAQ Futures up 31. Mr. Jeff, are you with us?
I am. Good morning, Chief.
Good morning. How are you? You see the headlines this morning on CNBC. Stagflation worries. Now, we were the first to drag that term out of Webster's, you and I think about 6 weeks ago. Or in the Webster's Never Use It Again file, we had to pull that out. So we got stagflation worries, coal crunch, even though we don't care about no stinking coal here in this country anymore. Bitcoin worthless and John Gruden out. So what do you think? We got those are four interesting headlines this morning.
A lot going out. A lot there. Well, I mean, from the basic definition of stagflation, I guess they got that right. The inflation rate is high, right?
We got
slowing economic growth, but, you know, I don't know. Does the data, is there enough data to really say you have, you know, the three elements of stagflation, right? High inflation, slowing economic growth, and unemployment remaining high. I know we have two for sure, but, you know, is it too early to call a slowdown of economic growth? I mean, aside from the obvious?
I think you could, if you try and push the inflation adjustment into every number that people are using to show there was economic growth, I think you could really make a case that there isn't any, unfortunately.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And that makes sense as an argument. So definitely a strong 2 out of 3, probably 3 out of 3. And yeah, stagflation's a fair term. A fair term to throw around. I think what's more interesting about it, if that becomes the accepted mean that we're, you know, in this stagflationary environment, that's one that the Fed's a little out of practice with. You know, I mean, they really, you know, they don't have a well-established playbook. You know, quantitative easing has been easy. It's been you know, one solution for everything for the last 10 years. But I don't. I think stagflation raises the bar a little bit.
Well, I think it does too, and I think it, I don't understand how it wasn't anticipated. I mean, obviously you're going to have this inflation issue coming up and, we'll talk about that a little bit, obviously, but, I mean, this has happened so often in so many places for so many hundreds of years that to not anticipate the effects of your actions, to me is really, I mean, it's a cause for, I want all your resignations. I mean, you know, it's like really? I mean, it's like, you know, watering the infield for 4 hours and then realizing you got mud out there. Well, how could you not know you're gonna have mud out there if you water the infield for 4 hours? I mean, to me, it's the same thing. And yet, seemingly, it's always going to be different this time, right? And I don't, you know, it's getting to the same place. But Jeff,
it's different, but it's the same. You know, stagflation in the 70s was the direct result. It's always some external shock, right? In the 70s, it was rising oil prices. This time, you could say it's COVID and supply chain disruption. But you know, it's always something that's an external shock. So
it's always a,
you know,
it's always
an external, we have to call it what it is.
It's always an external shock that gets blamed for it. But that's never the cause.
It's the catalyst, not the cause.
Right. It's not.
Right.
You know. It's you know. Did Archduke, what's his name, getting shot really cause World War One? No. It would have been something else a week later, right?
Yeah, named a pretty good band, though.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
Franz Ferdinand.
Ferdinand.
Yeah. So isn't that the most? Talk about the the happiest assassins on earth when they blew the deal, when the guy went to the meeting and he came down the same road afterward and they got him a second time? I mean, they're talking about your unlucky day. Hey, I want to ask you this before we get involved in other stuff we've been talking about with everybody else, but you have a, because of what you're doing with the magazine, the people you interview and so forth, you got a more expanded in some areas view of the world than maybe some of the rest of us. I don't know if you listened at all on the show Friday when Carl was talking about it. This hasn't been 1 month now. He's on this for like 3 months, where he's never seen these numbers. If you look at unadjusted numbers, that the population and the people in the workforce is actually going, available to work, not in the workforce, is actually going down. And we're losing people. That even with, you know, people said, well, everybody's sitting on the couch for a while, well, you can't blame the federal government for that because we kind of stopped all those payments. But it seems like there's this shortage of people. And Maddie's been very, you know, helpful and explaining what's it's like in the restaurant industry because his brother's in it. But are you noticing? I mean, we seem like we're short this 4 million people. And wherever you go, people are having sort of the same issue. And everybody's talking about it. But nobody's kind of explaining it. Okay, there's less people at the ports. But I want to know, Jeff, did they retire? Did they die? Did they just leave because they don't want to be here? Did you give a shot mandate, which I don't think caused it, and 100 people walk out because they don't want to get a shot? I mean, what did your role of people look like 15 months ago, and what does it look like now, and where the hell is everybody? Have you come across anybody that actually has some shot at real, they can give you some list of real information and say what's happening? I haven't read that anywhere.
It's an interesting question because I read something over the weekend. Actually, someone took a shot at this, and I don't remember the headline, but I know it was the Wall Street Journal. It was a couple days ago. And the journal did a story specifically attempting to answer this question, you know, where are the workers? And what they cited was some data, and I don't know the source, that specifically pointed, well, I think it was Friday's report, so it'd probably be a Friday or Saturday article, but it was specifically citing that women, very specifically that women, particularly they had two categories, I think it was under 54 or over 55, and it was women under 54 that are losing or leaving the workforce, that they specifically lost, I think, well, I forget what the number was, but they lost, you know, some certain amount of payroll jobs. That was a net loss as opposed to gain. And they were pointing to women making more decisions about staying home to care for the family or whatever, you know, it is. Maybe it's schools that still are not, you know, when schools aren't in session or when schools are still doing hybrid or, you know, I mean, you've got people staying home to care for their kids instead of working. But there is an answer to that question according to the Wall Street Journal, and it was citing women as being the where the most of the job losses were focused.
Well, that wouldn't. I'm not going to be sexist here, but it probably wouldn't affect the dock workers, the truck drivers, oil workers, those kinds of industry as much. I wouldn't think. I mean, not that there aren't women truck drivers, there are, but I got to believe it's a smaller percentage. I mean, that doesn't seem. It's, you know, it sounds like it's actually very accurate, and it's of course one of you know, Jeff, one of my pet peeves is get the government employees friggin' back to work. I mean, the people I'm paying, I'm working, you know what? You work. I mean, I know that's being very south side and grumpy, but hey, I mean, if my wife's going back to work, the teacher better go back to work because the kid better be in school. I mean, is this being selfish or no?
Don't get me started on teachers. Teachers have lost a lot of, again, you know, qualify it the way everybody has to. Although it's not true, I was going to say default to the teachers union because, hey, we all know teaching is an important job, often a thankless one, and not an easy one either. But, so it's easy to say, okay, this is all about the teachers unions. But no, the fact of the matter is teachers were opportunistic too. They stepped up. They didn't step up. They let their union speak on their behalf instead of saying, yeah, we realize that this is a regressive policy, that us staying home falls heavily among minority families and those, you know, who are able to utilize K-8 also as childcare so they can go out and earn an income for their family. and that we're, you know, we're really not only hurting children, but we're hurting, you know, disadvantaged families and at-risk families. And teachers didn't step up. They didn't fight back against their union. They stepped back and looked for these opportunistic things, like let's get new ventilation, let's defund, you know, all these different things that they were micromanaging in their schools and the budgets during COVID. They were opportunistic measures as opposed to saying, let's get back to work. So I'm not a big fan of how teachers in general responded to COVID over the last year and a half. But you know, notwithstanding that, I think, you know, I think you're seeing that across the board, and a lot of people that want to, you know, continue working from home and are trying to push back. You know, here's you raise a hypothetical question, so let me shoot one back at you. I think the Biden administration actually has to play their hand very carefully over the next month, because these vaccine mandates that they put on the federal workers, now they're going to have to enforce them. And you know they're having real difficulty in the military, particularly in some branches where there's a couple hundred thousand troops who said, no, they're not going to get vaccinated. But we saw Southwest do a shutdown a couple days ago for the same reason. And even though the airlines have mandated all employees, whether they be on plans or on planes or on the ground, be mandated, there's a couple hundred thousand airline employees that refuse to be vaccinated and understand the risk is they're going to lose their job. So you throw in federal employees, military workers, and then start getting into public and private employees as well, who are facing vaccine mandates, who are going to refuse to accept those. You've got some pretty nasty employment numbers out in front of you.
Well, you know, our man Lou is all over. He's part of a big lawsuit against the military. He's done this before because he was the anthrax vaccine years ago. I believe.
I have no idea.
Wasn't that one he challenged the government on making people in the military take this anthrax vaccine that was not approved by anybody? And it was pretty dangerous. Because at one point, didn't the military demand that everybody going anywhere got an anthrax shot? Something like that?
Don't know.
I think that's... Anyway, but this one, and, you know, I'm not going to speak for him, but evidently, as you work your way down this, you know, Pfizer's running our country when it comes to this, appears to me. They clearly have, you know, the administration in their pocket, but... I'm going to say, Jeff, that I went and got the vaccine. I think that everybody, certainly my age, should get it. But I also see when the ages start getting lower and lower and lower, even if the vaccine has a 1 in 100 chance of giving somebody some problems or 1 in 1,000, the lower you get on the chronological dial, the chances of the vaccine causing you more harm than getting the virus starts to become a toss-up. Let's put it that way. I'm not making a political statement, but the thing that appears that I'm getting from several different angles is if you force a vaccine, and especially people that are younger, that have already had the virus, you actually can cause some damage. And the amount of people in the armed forces are basically between, what, 18 and 30, right? I mean, there's people that if there's a big chunk of them that have already had COVID. And that if you force a vaccine mandate on there, the reaction, this is according to what I'm reading, the reaction can actually be way worse than if you just let them all get the COVID. That you can actually cause a problem because, I mean, I don't think anybody would recommend if you just had measles 3 weeks later, you get the vaccine when you're developing your own antibodies. Evidently, there's a time there when you're making them yourself where if you jam the vaccine on you, you actually can cause problems. And there's a name for it. I mean, I forget the name, but there's actually I won't say a disease, but it's a reaction that, you know, that people in the medical community know all about. That you have to be careful when you give vaccines to people who have already had the disease. So, evidently, what Lou and these guys are saying, you can't force vaccines on people that have already had it at that age, or you're going to cause more damage than. And I think our people. I mean, we've got the Biden administration. I mean, maybe if Trump was there, he'd be doing the same thing. Are, you know, backed by Pfizer, are demanding that kids get under the age of 12 start getting vaccinated. Well, Sweden just banned people from under 12 from getting vaccinated. I mean, there needs to be a little bit of a pause here, Jeff, I think. I mean, I'm not saying who's right or wrong, but it seems like it's not just a bunch of goofballs that are arguing against some of these policies. Or, I mean, are you feeling the same way? I mean, I'm not talking, but for me, yeah. Everybody who's older or anybody, I'm going to say anybody, I'm going to pick a number. Anybody over the age of 40, go get the damn thing. What's the matter with you? You're protecting yourself. I don't think you're protecting other people at this point, but you are protecting yourself. But I mean, there's some real controversy here, I think, Jeff. And why can't we just tell people the truth and let them, you know, we don't seem to be able to do that. You're on one side or the other, right?
Well, you know, that goes down another track, and I do want to revisit the question as to, you know, what these potential people walking away from their jobs might do to the unemployment numbers, because I think that is a great problem for the administration in the face of vaccine mandates. But, you know, the question, I just have a real simple attitude, and I'm not going to repeat it again. We repeat it over and over again. Yeah, I think everybody should get the vaccine. Just because we feel this obligation to do it so some idiot doesn't cancel you. Yeah, I got the vaccine, but I understand the people who choose not to. You know, I'm pro-choice, but I respect people of religion who have a different view about it, and I understand why they find, you know, abortion offensive. I don't understand why we're, you know, so apt to want to make decisions for other people. If you've been infected with COVID in the past and you have natural antibodies, there's enough overwhelming evidence that suggests that your natural immunity is better than one that's going to get jabbed inside you, and that you should not have the vaccine. If you need to be reminded of that fact, then just look at the fact that now boosters are being, you know, required for many people again because the efficacy wears off and is below 50%. That's below a threshold that was required for the vaccine to be approved in the first place. So, yeah I understand the people who want to make their own decision. It's their body, their choice. I get it. I don't want to keep on having to apologize for the people who want to make their own decision because they have a right to their own decision. And if you don't like it, stay home.
Jeff, you did ask
back to the other question.
Well, that's where I was going.
Think about this for a second. Sorry, go ahead.
I'm saying you alluded earlier to a question, and let me answer it as quickly as I can, like the stuff with the Southwest and everything. I'm going to say that, Jeff, you'll know I'm a total knucklehead when I tell you this, but when I was in the University of Chicago, they were big on this mathematical decision making. Right, you started out with regression analysis, you know, maximum minimum problems, which are a different type of math. And as you walk up the chain on that, there's something called quadratic program, which I took, and one which I really should not have, since I got a D in it. There was 12 PhD students that already had jobs with refineries, then there was me. You know, so I should have just said first day, see you guys, but I didn't. But anyway, what integer programming means is when you do math, when you get normally you come up with an answer that doesn't have to be an integer, right? But when you do integer programming, all the results have to be in whole numbers. Now, okay, why is that? Well, I can't have 90% of a Matty Weber show up to fly a plane. He needs his feet or his hands, right? So it has to be a whole Matty Weber. So one of the most difficult problems in math, and it's a different kind of math than we learned in grammar school, but most difficult problems is what they call the salesman coloring problem, which is the flip side of it, is if you have to go to 15 destinations in one day, and you know the mileage between all the different destinations, how do you chart the shortest route among all of them, which was a 500-year math problem until finally somebody got a computer big enough to sort of solve it. But you don't solve it by just, you know, add, subtract, and multiply and divide. It's massive amounts of computer sampling, and you try this way, and you pivot and go another way. I mean, it's real complicated. So when you have a Southwest or a United, Southwest is a little less complicated because, at least they used to be, all the pilots, I think, were checked out on all the planes. That's why they only flew 737s. Now, with the 737 MAX, I'm not so sure they could get away with that, but I don't know that. But United was even harder because if you got Jeff Joseph and Matty Weber ready to fly up, you know, fly out in a 757, but look, it just happens to be a 767, you're sitting in the tarmac, right, or in the airport. Now, but then you got all the stuff that goes in there. Well, you can only do 10 hours in the last day, and on this next trip, you've gone 8, and the next trip is 2.5 and not 2. I mean, to actually put all these flight crews on all these planes on time in all these cities is a massive problem. I mean, it's one of the most difficult things. I couldn't begin to do it. And I took all these courses how many years ago. I'd need a team of people that really knew their crap and a bunch of computers. And that's how I even start. So you don't need, I'll bet if you had 25, 50 maybe, flight crews in Southwest Air that all of a sudden let you know on a day's basis, nah, I'm not going, or on one day you lost 100 of them. You don't have to lose 800, Jeff, for the entire thing to fall. Because I have a sense, since I did so lousy this course, of how complicated this is. And let me put it this way. Nobody listening right now, including me, has any idea of how complex it is to put all these flight crews, again, with all these planes in the right time, with all the hour constrictions on them and how much sleep. It is a big deal. And if you throw any kind of monkey wrench in that, you got a problem. I know. I couldn't do it. I don't think anybody who's ever listened to the show can do it. Although maybe we have somebody who does this for a living. I don't know. But it's a big deal. Just saying.
Well, that potential disruption appears to be out there. But what do you think about the prospect of mass resignations in the light of vaccine mandates? You know, there's deadlines coming up. For federal military employees and private employees that have been imposed by their companies or by their bosses or governments, whatever. And if those people choose to resign, that's not going to be pretty for inflation numbers, for unemployment numbers either.
If it's federal people and all of a sudden they're going to get a pension check the next week, who exactly is that helping? I don't know if you thought of that. Yep. Plus the people at Southwest and these other places, they keep saying they have these shortages. They got billions of dollars to keep paying people. Did they, or did they lay them off anyway? Did anybody audit these people that they gave them all this money? Did they actually keep paying all these guys or ladies?
Yeah, you know, I don't know. It's a good question as to how this stuff is actually coming in. I once had a government official that I knew tell me. He worked at the Census Bureau, and he said that there was the reason that we have all these troops stationed all over the world, you know, 40,000 here, 50,000 here, in places where there hasn't seen military action or real threats in decades, is because no president on his watch would want to pull those troops out of those, because eventually they're going to fall off the military payroll, they're going to show up as unemployed people. And that, you know, nobody would want to bring to home 200,000 troops because that would be a hit to their employment stats. I never was able to, verify that notion, if that's a real thing, but it's an interesting conspiracy theory anyway.
Well, the numbers, to get back to our original, the numbers show in the last year and a half, since December of 2019, which is the last claim number I can get, we essentially have 4 million people, 4.5 million people less working, and we got 4.5 million people in this we don't know what the hell they're doing column. And
14 million jobs.
Yeah. Well, yeah. It's actually, I'm looking at the thing right here. This is the
14
adjustment.
Or 11 million.
Well, we got 157 million people were employed at the end of 2019. Now we got 153. Okay, and we had 95 million in the column. Well, we don't know what they're doing. They're going to school, they're retired, they're something. Now we've got 100. So basically, we've pushed 4.5 million people from one column to the next. Now, which is roughly 2.5% of the workforce, which probably is enough to cause shortages in key areas, right? I mean, if you've had, if you got 100,000 truck drivers retired, I guess, and don't want to go back to work, you got to sort of fill that spot. Now, are people doing that? I mean, Matt yesterday talked about a lot of people in the back part of the restaurant, whatever the term he used.
Back of the house.
Back of the house. Maybe now have construction jobs and are paying more and they're not going back to being in the restaurant. I mean, there's a lot of that. I mean, we know a couple of the ladies. Well, you know them, Jeff. Jess used to do the show with us. She was going to DePaul. She was a waitress at Ceres. Now she works for some human resources firm. She's not going back to Ceres. Maybe she would on a Friday night if it was crowded, if she needed the dough, but she's not going to quit her job. Two of the other ladies are now real estate ladies. There's been a lot of educational move up, which is a good thing, I think. But I mean,
people,
yeah, but I'm saying, I don't, I mean, I, but we are short, 4.5 million people. From yep. Which, and I mean, is it? Is there any way we can get him out of his last column? I mean, I think I honestly believe, Jeff, and this is a very unpopular, that the people that we're paying, that we're letting in the city retire at 55, I think we need to offer them some other spot until they're 65. We're not going to pay you when you're 55. We can't afford it. But it's, you know, that's going to be unpopular with some people, obviously. But I mean, on the federal level, how many people are just going to retire when you drop this vaccine mandate on them? And now we're going to pay them and hire somebody new to do the same job?
Yeah. You know, one thing I haven't been keeping track of, but I expect that you have been. How much has wage inflation been an issue during this period?
How much? That's one I bet you have a better feel on than me. I don't know necessarily. I mean, we've seen on the low end, the minimum wages go from 10 to 12, and we know in restaurants in the McDonald's end of the world that they were paying $10 and $12, now paying $15, $18, and maybe even $20. But to me, Jeff, that is such an old story. I mean, that number has probably been $10 an hour for 10 years. And now, you know, it should have been 20 the whole way, or 18 or 17. I mean, when you look at the amount of what I did my little study on, and if you bought yourself a junker car for $5,000, which, by the way, is now going to cost you 10, that it costs you your first 66 hours of work at $10 an hour with just taxes, title insurance, not title insurance, title, city sticker, state plate. Jeff, that's too much. I mean, you can't expect somebody to work. The burger at lunch is going to cost the guy more than an hour's work if he's making $10 an hour. I mean,
just pulling that up while we were chatting, it appears as though hourly pay for the average worker has risen an average of 4.6% over the past year. That's running at the typical pace would have been 2.5% as a rise. So wage inflation is about 80% higher right now, you know, than its normal run rate.
Well, yeah, but here's, we got to get a break, Jeff. When we come back, first of all, you're right, but you're looking at these numbers, but if you look at what mean worker, average worker, pick an industry is probably the best thing, and what they made 20 years ago, you can't look at what their wage, I think, you can't look at where their wage inflation numbers are versus the CPI. You've got to look at, in my opinion, what they've made an hour, how much four or five things that are really big items cost then, what they make an hour now, and what those same items cost today. And first thing you'll do is throw out both the CPI and the wage inflation thing you're using. They're not even on the same planet. Which is, I think, we almost need a reset on all these numbers, in my opinion. Let's go to break for it. SP Futures up 11, NASDAQ Futures up 71. Far cry from last night when we were down 12. Be right back, Stocks and Jacks.
How much confidence do you have that your investments will make you wealthy? Do you truly know the odds? Welcome to Luckbox, the control freak's guide to life, money, and probability. Luckbox shows you how to gauge the likelihood of success before you commit to an investment or any other decision. And Luckbox is free for 1 year at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Each new issue dives deep into the current investing climate, separates the signal from the noise with relevant trade ideas, and equips you with cutting-edge tactics you don't already know. Luckbox is the essential magazine for proactive investors who are hell-bent on pursuing life, luxury, and happiness through sports, fitness, travel, food, spirits, music, and a whole lot more. Smart investors don't bet on possibilities, they play the probabilities. Luckbox is $7.99 on newsstands, but you can subscribe for 10 free digital issues at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Don't rely on luck. Get Luckbox at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks.
Hello, this is Tom Howe, the Chief. We've talked a lot on the show about risk and suitability, about how your portfolio should match your age, income, and risk appetite. It's been hard for investors to maintain that suitability in the last several years due to a Fed strategy that has driven interest rates to virtually zero. You may have even heard that the Fed was trying to drive conservative investors to a riskier portfolio on purpose, for whatever reason. I'm sure you're aware of investors that took some increased risk, such as longer-term fixed income securities, and are now unhappy with that choice. At PTI, we've always stressed total portfolio risk awareness and tried to minimize chasing returns in a tough environment. Well, now it looks like maybe interest rates are moving more towards historical levels. Everyone needs to be aware of what that continued movement might do to your portfolio, both good and bad. We also have a stock market that seems to have stalled, at least for the short term. I think it's time for everyone to take a serious look at their goals, their risks, and their portfolios. Do they match? If not, we can help. We have a signature protected index program. We have ways to hedge against interest risk. We can make that portfolio right for you again. Go to PTISecurities.com or call us right now. The market can change very rapidly. That's PTISecurities.com.
Hi, I'm Audrey Johnson, an owner of Home Source Realty and a frequent contributor to Stocks and Jocks. If you're nervous about the stock market and considering diversification, or are looking for a rate of return way better than your banks, consider adding rental properties to your portfolio. Whether it's a condo, single family, or multi-unit building, I can help you select a property that meets your financial needs. Call or text me at 708-349-3456. That's 708-349-3456. Or visit my website at myhomesourcerealty.com. That's myhomesourcerealty.com.
Stocks, jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now. Right here, right now. Right now.
Low North Bay Stocks and Jacks. I'm Tom Ollie. Just Brett Weber on the board. SP Futures now up 10.50. We're putting the whip to it here a little bit. We're up maybe 25 points from the bottom last night. Wasn't watching it all night, but when I watched after the end of one of the games last night, a lot of games on a Monday night we had, Matty. And some pretty good ones. Let me get my other page up here because I'm staring at the unemployment report. The Dow futures are, they'll be up here in a second. They're up 78 in individual stocks. Like I said before, we've got Nike is Salesforce up 221. We got Microsoft up $1.60, back up to 295. It got into the 80s, but it's bouncing back up. And McDonald's up $1.97, 248. So we've got some stocks in the Dow that are up a reasonable amount here. Over in Asia, we've got pretty much losses across the board here. Nikkei down 267. That's a full percent. Shanghai down 45, 1.25%. Hang Seng down 362, 1.4%. So Korea, all those markets overseas were down pretty much a full 1% as oil prices continue to rise. Well, who knows if that's the cause, but that's part of the headline. So I guess it means something. Who knows? DAX down 47.3%. FTSE down 32.5%. CAC around down 26.4%. So we've got some sell-offs in Europe. One of the reasons for this is we sold off late on the close yesterday after Europe was closed, so a little bit of a catch-up on their part. As a way of review, we were down 250 in the Dow yesterday, S&P down 30, NASDAQ down 93, so pretty much a 0.7 across the board there. Bonds unchanged at 1.61. The Bund's up 1 to minus 0.11. I'm going to predict by the end of the year those guys are positive, but we'll see if that prediction works out. Japan, positive 0.09, getting very close to the positive 10. Oil, down 35 cents, 80.17. They were a little bit up earlier. Brent down 30 cents, 83.35. Natural gas down 14 cents, 5.19. It's like a dollar down in natural gas really in the last few weeks. That's a lot. Well, it was a lot to get to 6.18 or wherever it got, but now it's back off a dollar. Gold up 4.30, 17.60. Silver down 8 cents, 22.58. Copper unchanged at 4.37. And we got Bitcoin down 5.81 to 57,023 as Jamie Dimon said, "It's worthless!" Matty, what do you got for it? Are you selling your Bitcoin account today based on your buddy Jamie Dimon telling you it's useless?
I don't have any. I wish I did. Coming up on 37 minutes past the hour, good morning once again to everyone out there. A couple of issues on I-55. We'll start out in the southwestern suburbs on the northbound side at exit 267, which is right at Illinois 53. There's a rollover crash in the right ditch that's blocking the right shoulder with crews on the scene of I-55. And then further inbound into the city, we have a crash on the Stevenson I-55 at Central Avenue that's blocking the left shoulder. So that's causing significant delays on I-55 heading northbound, as you can imagine. No issues on the Ryan, I-57, or the Bishop Ford, just normal traffic volumes there. Heavy traffic on the Eisenhower. We had an earlier crash at North Avenue. That's clear, but lots of congestion on the Ike. Same for the Edens and Kennedy, but no accidents to report. Off the expressways, out in the suburbs, there's a couple of crashes out west. In St. Charles, there's one at County Farm Road and St. Charles Road, and another one at Geneva Road and Prince Crossing Road. And then up in Bartlett, Route 59 at Stearns Road, there is a crash. But everything else all quiet out there. Weather today, cloudy and misty early, and then we should see some sunshine this afternoon and a high of 69. Hopefully should be decent weather for the White Sox this afternoon. In Phoenix, it's going to be a cold one by their standards. Sunshine with a high of just 68 degrees. They'll be back in the 80s here in a few days, but a cold front has moved through the southwest and has it pretty cold in Phoenix. Right now, it is clear and 59 down in the Valley of the Sun. In sports, as I mentioned, White Sox and Astros make up today, this afternoon, after yesterday was rained out. It's a 1:07 Central Time first pitch that has Carlos Rodon taking the hill for the White Sox. He'll go against Lance McCullister Jr., the ace for the Astros, so that should be a good one. Of course, Houston leads 2-1, so Sox need to win to stay alive and even that series. Boston advanced to the ALCS. They took care of Tampa 6-5 yesterday in a walk-off sack fly in the bottom of the ninth, winning that series 3-1, so they'll await the winner of the White Sox and the Astros. Lastly, Monday Night Football, it was Baltimore coming back down big. They were down 22-9 and came back and beat the Colts 31-25. Chief.
What, you guys are, you know, armchair physicists or, you guys that are
really?
Into, yeah. So this lady yesterday that waxed into the crash barrels, which are supposed to, stop your forward progress at 29th Street by the Ryan there. She hit him so hard she went airborne and landed in the parking lot off the bridge. What do you suppose the speed was she was going?
Good Lord.
She dead, by the way. She dead.
Yeah, that's crazy. I mean, was she flying through the rain or something and didn't see that?
This is 2 a.m. and she landed in the parking lot for Armour Square Park, which I think is where we played ball at one time.
Well, was she on the expressway?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Right where the express and the local split apart.
Oh, there you go. So she couldn't decide between which one to go on.
But they have all those barrels in case you do just this, that they're full of sand that, you know, you bust into and the sand flies all over the place and dissipates your... So, I mean, what was she driving, a plane?
Well, she had the benefit of, from my physics, I remember that notion of displacement, right? Where you,
yeah.
If you have distance and velocity and acceleration and all those things going. So, you know, she had a long runway. So, because of the long runway, it's not surprising that she got a launch. You know?
Yeah. God. Well, yeah, that's no good. But, Jeff, to get back to what we were talking about, I think... I'll tell you a quick story that has, I think what's happening is I sent you that email about, some of the thing. If you compare 1980, you really get a different picture, but you don't even have to go back that far because a lot of people aren't even 40 years old. So, if you go back to, 2000 and you just look at big items and you look at what the median income was, and if you look in certain industries, You can lose all track of perspective when you start using percentage terms. It's sort of like if a stock drops from 100 to 5, then it goes back to 550, and you say it's up 10%, and you go, it's up 50 cents. I don't care what the percentage, it's up a whole 50 cents, it's still down 94.50. I mean, at some point you can mislead people by percentages. And I think we're starting to see some of that in these what people are quoting in these percentages. I'll give you a quick example. Audrey and I were at our favorite, one of the ethnic restaurants in the neighborhood. I won't say which one, but we know which one it was. And we're real friendly with the owner, and her husband helps out all the time in there, even though he's a remodeler too. And they said, well, the cook quit. And this is coming out of COVID. They don't rip you off on the prices at all, and it's, you know, really good stuff. But their dinners in the couple of years we've been going there are up from, it's a Thai place. They're up from, you know, 9-something to, you know, 12, 13, 14-something. But, you know, you get all, it's fine, it's okay. But I'm saying they're up to that point, and they tell you, well, the cook quit. And I'm sitting there on Saturday night, the last thing I'm gonna do is get in this economic discussion. There are some points where even I shut up. But I'm just kind of listening for, you know, what are the numbers? They said, well, we just gave them a terrific raise. And I'm going, okay. So Audrey, of course, says, oh, so what's he making? Like, they give him a raise from, like, $12 an hour to 18. And I'm thinking, you're not even scratching the surface of this, if this guy is actually planning. And what's he doing for you? He just is now producing, what do you figure a really good Asian cook comes out per hour? It's got to be, what do you think, Maddie? 30 dinners in an hour?
Yeah, maybe. I don't know.
At least. So your price, I mean, you're broke. You tell us that right away. But if you know what you're doing, I think you're popping stuff out pretty darn quick. And I'm going to say that so in the last 6 months, the guy's given you $150 more an hour based on your price increases. And they thought that giving the guy like a $5 an hour raise is, you know, their heart was popping out of their chest. And I'm going, guys, you're not even on the same planet. I mean, $20 an hour is what? $40,000 a year, right? For my Pullman years. There's 2,080 hours in a year if you work 8 hours a day. So we're talking, you know, $32,000. What exactly do you do these days making $32,000, Jeff? You can't have a family. You can't have your own apartment, for God's sake. Can you have a car? I mean, the average car, a new car is $40,000 now, right? I mean, I'm not lobbying for anything here. I'm just saying in 2000, median salary was 30. Now it's 36, like 31 and 36 or 37. It's probably up a little bit now. So say 40, which is, you know, maybe it's too high. Because, Maddie, you found a number that's actually lower than mine. You were 35, right, when you looked it up? But a car's gone from 15 on average to 40. A house has gone from 165 to 330 now or something. A college education has gone from probably, what, 20 to 70, depending on where you're going. And your hospitalization's probably gone from $500 a month to $1,200 with a bigger deductible. So how exactly is anybody keeping pace here, Jeff? I mean, the numbers we're using are horse bleep. I mean, you gotta look past the numbers and say, okay, do these even match up? I mean, our CPI, in my opinion, needs a whole reset. Do you agree with me here? Are you idea where I'm coming from?
Well, I certainly agree on the CPI reset, and we've talked about that many times before. And then your story, you know, I agree with the premise too. That's not, you know, it's hard to define that as a living wage. But I'd also go a step further and Matt, with friends in the industry and restaurant industry being part of my DNA as well, I can tell you that $5, that $6 an hour raise, that's pretty painful for that establishment. Don't think that doesn't, they're already operating on slim margins. You know, restaurants operate on margins below 10%, and that $6 increase an hour is pretty meaningful to him. To that owner, and as you said, it still doesn't make a dent. So, you know, these are tough models. I mean, it's just tough.
Well, the theory, Jeff, though, is when you actually took labor economics two places, graduate school and labor, the idea that the last person you pay, the last person, the marginal, God, I can't remember this stuff. The marginal utility he is to you. Okay, so the last guy you hire, if you're paying him $20 an hour, he's giving you $20 an hour more in revenue. So the next guy probably is only giving you 19, so you don't hire him if you got to pay 20. So there's sort of a theory to this. But it's really strange though when you see all the different factors of production. I mean, when a burger goes from $5 to $15 over the course of a decade. And I think what we've seen in Chicago and a lot of places is the lease has quadrupled or something. But the person actually, I mean, a person sitting there flipping the burger, sitting there going, if I can get a better guy back here, and I can make three more burgers per hour at $15 a throw, I'm worth $45 to this firm. Now I don't expect to get all of it, okay? But I also. If the three burgers now are $45 and they used to be $15, to pay somebody decently in that spot to keep them, it's not giving them a raise from $10 to $11. Just in theory, you're not even on the same page. So what interferes there is somebody signed a lease for this building where I can only pay these people $10 an hour because my lease is so high. And one of my guys, well, he was a guest on the show, Burger Chef Al. I said, Al, if you knew that you had to pay people $15 an hour instead of $10, would you have ever signed that lease? And he says, hell no, I would have told the guy I couldn't pay him that much. So it's kind of a question that the cross that people talk about is the last man in, right? But they're not going to go back. The lease is a given. The electric bill is a given. The gas bill is a given. The amount of people you can put it, I mean, all that stuff's kind of a given, and the part that goes over the fence.
Yeah, Chief, they're given, but they're not constant.
Well, that's what I'm saying. That's exactly
gone
right.
Up materially, you know, in the last 6 months, the price of meat's gone up. The price of packaging materials for cardboard and paper goods are much, much higher for restaurants.
Absolutely.
Because of all the pressure that Amazon deliveries have placed on that industry. Commodity prices are up across the board, so it's not just about, you know, it's not that the lease and all the other costs are the constants, and the only variable is the employment rate.
Well, plus the up ones, right?
And the one thing that restaurant owner knows for certain is he cannot pass on those commodity increases caused by, you know, supply chain logistics or whatever, and the employment rate increases. He can't pass that on the menu.
I agree.
He can't.
Yeah. All I'm saying is that over the last 20 or 40 years, labor's been sort of the odd man out. And all of a sudden, there's some power there, and you look at some of the numbers and you say, boy, these people are like way behind. I mean, it's not me telling the restaurant guy, boy, I really feel great that you got everybody a big raise that you didn't count on. I mean, I feel bad for him too. What I'm saying is, if you look at the numbers, that for the last 20 years, a lot of these wages have not kept pace. And what I'm saying is you can say that you're giving somebody a 10% raise, but if you're going from $10 an hour to 11, when the car the guy needs to get to work is just doubled with price, and oh, by the way, the tolls are up 50%, you think you're helping, but you almost aren't, is my only point, Jeff. I mean, even though you're doing the best you can, is what I'm saying. The numbers are getting skewed, is my only point.
Yeah, and that's why you have so many fewer restaurants now than you did a year and a half ago, 2 years ago.
I think you're... What do you make? Let's change subjects a little bit, because you get out in the world more than like most of our guests, I think. My brother's always been on this worldwide price increase stuff, and the last time the price of basically a day's food for the worldwide went over $5, we had revolutions all over the damn place, Arab Spring, all that kind of stuff. That's starting to happen again, where these prices are. I mean, you're not exactly getting a raise if you live in the Sinai, right? But your cost of meal can go up, right? Just like you're talking about. What do you think the political danger is to rising prices? In this country, we don't seem to care because in the initial part, the right people get to raise prices and the rest of the people we don't care about. That's one man's opinion. But worldwide, what do you think the risk is?
Well, the risks are catastrophic, potentially. You know, I mean, there would be parallels to the 2008 food crisis, you know, which was a price crisis. Some countries, you know, they had export restrictions to protect their supplies back then. You know, there were climate related crop losses, and it was a terrible year, and the result of that was a lot of social unrest on a global basis in 2008. And then you throw in, you know, pandemic and other issues, but, you know, it's potentially very catastrophic.
What do you think the dangers are, the country you know more about than anybody who comes on the show, what do you think the dangers are to China? I mean, they've got coal, it seemed like seemingly some coal shortages. They just had a huge flood. They've had some shortages in some places. What do you think if there's just a general price rise in all the food over there? I mean, what do you think their susceptibility is to that? Well, I mean, what's their reaction going to be?
Well, I think what they've done well is, as part of their policy, you know, with this Belt and Road Initiative that began several years ago, where they've actually, you know, infused their capital under the balance sheets of countries all over the world, particularly those countries that were rich in natural resources, but that's about it. Well, China has made an aggressive and conscious effort as part of its larger strategic planning to recognize their shortages of natural resources, and goods and services, and to create economic partnerships in a somewhat authoritative, you know, manner, but to create partnerships with countries that have resources that they need. So I think part of their strong and smart strategic planning is, hey, you know, and what they've done through the Belt and Road Initiative is we'll give you $100 million to build this road. And that road, by the way, in many ways leads to China. They're just going back to the old trade routes that China enjoyed all the time, and they're making sure that the infrastructures and transportation and logistics systems of other countries that have natural resources that they need can get them product faster and easier. It's been an amazingly smart strategic move. Their central planners think about long-term growth and insulating China from these kind of risks in a very, very strategic manner. So as to, you know, how that's playing out right now, I couldn't claim to know, but it's not as though it hasn't been part of their planning and on their mind. You know, that is why the Belt and Road Initiative exists. That's why they've invested billions in countries that have resources that they need, and to build roads and trains and transportation systems that can get those, that not only improve the standard of living for those countries, they've also taken, you know, invested in ports around the world in a big way. But they've also ensured that those trade routes lead back to China, and that they're not going to be on the short end of supply chain considerations. So you got to, you know, hands off to them. We got all the things that we're doing here.
Yeah.
But China is really thinking long term. You know, their goal is to overtake the U.S. to step three, and you know, there's good case to believe that's going to happen.
Well, the headline this morning, which again is nothing but a headline, it's somebody, hey, write me a headline type of thing. It says major indexes in China and Korea fall at least 1% as oil prices continue rising. And earlier in the show, we talked about India allegedly having only 8-day supply at all their coal power plants. You know, how it got that low, I have no idea. And I'm assuming they'll be able to get it back up there. I mean, they'll just import more stuff if they can. But, I mean, if there's a general issue with this in China, and they, to the point where there is some civil unrest, I'm not saying it's going there, what do you think the current administration, are they going to clamp down internally like they used to? Are they going to use it as an excuse to try and do something in Taiwan? Are they going to try and do something somewhere else? I mean, what do you think what reaction is it going to cause, do you think, if it ever gets that far?
I think it would just be guessing. I don't have a feel for that.
Yeah, because I don't either. I was hoping maybe.
Yeah, I can't weigh in on that, but I do have a question for you. Just I'll let you, you know, close out our segment here. It's just an unanswered question, and we're looking at this as we're preparing over at Luckbox for our next, you know, economics issue, our inflation focused issue. And then there's the question, does a weaker dollar cause inflation, or does inflation cause a weaker dollar?
Well, if you pour more money into the system, which I always believe is the root cause of inflation, you should have more dollars now in relation to euros or yen or anything else, right? So it should cause a weaker dollar, correct? Because you need, because people, but the problem is everybody's doing the same thing, Jeff. So it's being done in unison, which is, so you need, here's the mindset. And if I don't know if I could even write something like this where it makes sense, but you need the mindset that at some point your dollar and your yen and your euro dollar and your renminbi and all the other stuff, if you're all syncing them together, you almost can't look at them in relation to each other. You got to look at them in relation to other commodities. So in other words, if the Ford pickup is now 80 grand when it used to be 40, maybe it's not the Ford pickup that it's going up in price, it's the dollar that's going down in value. And that's a really hard concept for anybody who's grown up in the U.S. like we all have, because the dollar has always been your storehouse of value. We've had a little bit of inflation here and there, and we're kind of dropped somewhat. But it's really a hard thing. I mean, for instance, yesterday I mentioned that for somebody my age, you know, if you retire, you make, you know, whatever, $2,100 a month on Social Security or something. Well, if the government didn't have a CPI number and we had an inflation rate of 8% over the next year, all of a sudden that's only worth $1,100 to me. So yeah. The question is, which one's moving? I mean, we talked a little bit about physics earlier. When you start moving 60 miles an hour, you're moving 60 miles an hour in relation to somebody else. You know, if he's moving 60 miles an hour and you're both the other way against a fixed point, which is actually moving because the Earth's moving, now you're moving 120 miles an hour in relation to him, right? And it's very difficult for people that have never done it. This is a concept that people in Europe, especially before there was euro dollar, where you had all these different currencies, and every time you walked 40 feet, you had to change currencies. I could never do as well in grad school as the people from Europe, because this was second nature to them. Oh, the Swiss franc's down today, so I don't get as much of the French franc. No type of, but here we don't think that way. So our thought is the market is up 20% last year. Okay, but the money supply is up 20%. Maybe the dollar is just down 20% and the market's not up at all in relation to something else. We don't think that way. And no amount of columns that writing by somebody like me is ever going to get us there. But do you have a grasp what I'm talking about?
Yeah, I do.
If every country does it together, you don't get anywhere, which is what we're doing, I think.
Yeah.
I don't know if you were prepared for that, bud. But you asked and I told you. You'll never ask me another question. Anyway, thanks, Jeff. As usual, good stuff. SPV is up 6. The SPV is up 44. Back tomorrow, Stocks and Jocks.
What did we learn, Palmer?
I don't know, sir.
I don't know either. I guess we learned not to do it again.
Stocks and Jocks is brought to you by PTI Securities and Futures. Go to PTIsecurities.com. PTI ProDirect. Trade for as low as a penny per share and a dollar per option contract. Learn more at PTIProDirect.com. Nadex. Offering an intuitive way to trade the financial markets. Visit Nadex.com. HomeSource Realty. Call Audrey Johnson at 708-349-3456. Hamzy Analytics. Listen to Fari Hamzy every other Thursday and visit HamzyAnalytics.com. ChiroMed. Back or neck pain? Schedule a complimentary consultation by calling 708-403-2727. Dax Research. Tune in for David Andelman's technical analysis on Mondays and Thursdays and call 1-800-821-4968.